Okay, welcome everyone. This is a recap of a section that I wanted to talk about of Descent into Avernus. We've just finished the entire hardcover plus plenty of one-shots from the Adventurers League, and I slipped in some non-Adventurers League stuff in there as well. We played from level 4, so in the Van Thamper dungeons and onwards right through to the end. It's only just been a couple of weeks ago since we finished. Lots of people talk on forums and Facebook group and DMs group about the chapter 3 and the nature of it and how best to approach it. I think the main, I guess going back a little bit, what really I thought was a little bit funny or interesting was I think WizKids can't really win. When the Storm King's Thunder came out, I was listening to one podcast of a group playing through it, and they were going through the linear initial sections, playing through the adventure, and eventually got to the point where it's basically just a sandbox, and they were describing it as, what the hell, the we've played through this adventure, it's been okay, and now the whole adventure just says to us to wander around in the Heartlands for a while, in the Sword Coast for a while, until we get to level 7. So the DM there just wasn't impressed at all, and they ended up shutting down the campaign out of lack of direction. On the flip side, you get something like Tyranny of Dragons, where you get the flip side of the complaints. This is just a straight, we're led from one scene to the other, there's no choices, we just play through each scene from the DM or from the adventures timeline. And Descent into Avernus, particularly chapter 3, has two paths that you follow. Yeah, so there's two paths. So immediately it triggers alarm bells for some that they're being led down a path, and which path do I pick? Which path is the best? Which path is more fun? And if you actually read, there's a section in Descent into Avernus where it says, at the discretion of the dungeon master, you could change paths or switch from one to another. And if you sort of look at each one, I'll just call one up on screen here. This is the Path of Devils. So, characters level 8, to Demon Zapper, and to distill that right down to the point is you go to the Demon Zapper, encounter a dude who says, I've got information for you if you do something for me. And straight on that, he says, go to the Bone Brambles and check it out. You go to the Bone Brambles, talk to a hag. She says, well, I know something, and I can tell you that thing that guy needs if you do something for me. And so then you go into Eldrek's grave and to looking for some Titan blood. And of course the Titan's there, forget what he was now, an imp or something. You meet a guy who says, I can give you what you need or tell you what you need to know. And okay, I'm pausing from time to time as kids come through. I get distractions because there's a lot happening over this weekend. But just to, where was it? Aldrich's grave, yeah. So an imp. Yeah, sure, you can have some of my blood. You can have what you need if you can turn me back into a titan. So then you can trip off. So I think this gets a bit, firstly, a bit tedious for players who get led to one encounter and then all that leads them through is this merry goose chase from one to the other. Now, I think in Tiamat's Monument, where you finally meet Arcan and can maybe somehow trade Lulu for a vial of Tiamat's blood, and then you go back to Arcan's tower, go back to Uldrek's grave, who then turns back into a titan, who then helps you out with the hag, who then does the thing and says, oh right, go and see Bell or whatnot. And so in a sense, there's every one of these is either, can you do something for me and I'll tell you something, or can you get something for me, or I'll tell you something. And sometimes it's tell you something, sometimes it's gives you something. Now, if you're a bit flexible about what the information is that they give you, or what thing it is that you need, then you can just swap and change across. And if I jump into the, where is it? Path of Demons, it's largely the same. You know, Tower of Urm, you forget it, spawning trees, you find out, I'll go and see a guy in a tower, go to the tower, oh, I know a bit, I'm Mordenkainen, cool, obelisk, you know, and you get given missions. Eventually, Mirror of Mephistar, Mephistar, I can help you with information if you do X, and you carry on. So what I did, so with the Path of Demons, Path of Devils up here, you can see both of them are just this linear progression. It's not quite like that, because you get sent back to others to progress forwards, and there's offshoots like in the Bone Brambles. You end up going to Mahadi's for the hag there, just come back and then carry on in your linear progression. So what I did was pick the ones that I liked, pick the ones that looked interesting to me, that I thought the players would appreciate, and also it opened up opportunity for me to present options to the players as well, so they could, you know, have agency and decide which sort of pathway they took. So if I step through the example of what I did, they came out of Elturel, went to the hell, and with Lulu, the Hell Wasp Nest, which is all the very end of chapter 3. And then they had a Vrock in tow with them, the emo sort of existential crisis Vrock wandering in Canada that sort of took a shining to the Kenku. And so from there, the Vrock was jumping up and down because it could see the demon zapper flashing in the distance. But they had Lulu had also said to them, oh, well, there's this place called the, let me call it up again on screen. Yeah, the spawning trees, which spawn demons. And that I recall something about that, and I guess it was a little bit further. They could sort of see it from the rise that they were looking at. But the demon zapper and Screech, their Vrock buddy, led them in the path of the demon zapper. So they went to that. The Dao there said, get me some info. I can help you out. I know what you need to do. But he said that I can help you out, but I really need this Titan blood. If you ever find some, come back to me and we'll make a deal. I think that this hag nearby can help you out on your quest. If you can help me, you know, we've got a deal. So when they went to the hag just, you know, didn't go, oh, I need Titan blood and la la la, led them on again. From the Bone Brambles, they went to Mahadi's, and she told them, let's see, a Wrecked Flying Fortress. So I gave them the information straight away. Wrecked Flying Fortress C is chapter 10 in right down the bottom here. And said, yeah, if you go to the Wrecked Flying Fortress, there's the keys to the companion and you can unlock it and da da da. So that was her prophecy or vision. They went there, the first wandering encounter when they got lost and rolled poorly on their check, they ended up going in completely the wrong direction and end up in Tiamat country. And that's where they encountered Arcan, and so I drew him in to the whole thing, which was a bit of fun, because he just instantly said, oh, okay, you're not going to give me your Lulu as a buddy, and you've got nothing to offer me, so I've got nothing. And he spotted a ranger sneaking up from the side, so he just instructed his Minotaur and sent a squad of Abishai to just kill, hunt down the party and kill. So that turned into a big road chase. So there's Arkhan's Tower, and they went straight to that. There was Tiamat's Monument. Arkhan's Tower, they didn't meet the turtle at all. That's just another step and another discussion to get to another step. So they just wandered out into Tiamat's territory. So jumped into this one here. And once they got back on track, I jumped them straight into the Flying Fortress. They'd done some wandering encounters like the that I'd put in there as well, but of the primary things that advance the plot, they're in the Flying Fortress, and I use this now as not the end of the line, but they've got the keys to the companion. Hooray, they succeed, and they return back to Eltaril at that point, and have a big fight, flying up to the top of the companion, the big ball in the sky, and one by one unlock each of these locks on it to release the planetar that's inside. And so that gave them a minor victory or a halfway victory, because I had described this companion as continuing to blast the city with black lightning, and it was possible that the city was destroyed and broken apart into pieces, falling to the ground even before it reached the River Styx. So there was a faster time clock that they managed to avert. And this also released a planetar, which was still bound to the city of Eltaril, couldn't leave, so I didn't have to worry about it going with the party and dominating battle and so on. But they had a powerful ally at their base camp of Eltaril, and a great victory that the companion was finally snuffed out, and the angel within was released. And so they started mustering defences. The planetar could summon in or raise and create food and water, whatever. And so Eltaril was sort of safe, at least relatively safe, with some powerful defenders that had slowly been trickling in. And the planetar was able to say to them and lead them onto the next, well, if you're looking for the Sword of Tiamat, this is where they were going for. Obviously, that's central to the story. Is pursuit and location of the Sword of Tiamat, Sword of Zariel, was the only guy that knows that I'm aware of is Olianthus, who is maintaining the crypt of the Hellriders, and who's the other guy that becomes a fiend in Zariel, the one that they met at the hill at the start. Of course, they had defeated him and killed him, so they're like, oh shit, so the guy that knows everything that we could have just, if we didn't kill that guy and talk to him, he could have directed us straight to the scab. They didn't get that, so I led them. So it's not even on this, it's a wrecked Flying Fortress. I'll jump back to, Crypt of the Hellriders. And so the Crypt of the Hellriders, they go through that, and Olianthus at the end of that says, right, well, okay, you've broken into my crypt and you say you're good and you say you're powerful enough to actually turn Zariel. I'll give you a quest to prove yourself. There's a, what are they called, celestial nearby, trapped, chained, whatever. And so they went and did one of the Adventurous League One shots to prove themselves as a Olianthus given quest. Returning back there, he said, right, I'm on your side, no problems. When the shit hits the fan, I'll be there with all the Hellriders if you can return the sword, and we'll meet up back at Eltaril for a grand melee, with a battle of forces. So they had him on his side on the Hellriders, and he told them where the scab was. So then it's straight into the scab, end of chapter 3 effectively. So I gave the party some options. Some of the encounters that advanced the plot, they just stumbled across. You could have them jump path, not because they're specifically directed there. You know, if they didn't know there were two paths, they would still feel, the party would probably still feel that they're just being led from one thing to another, even though the DM is actually zigzagging and across between between pathways. But if you can find ways to present some options, or like what happened with the Planetar for me, they had to have a big powwow with the powers of Elturel and Ravengard, and decide where to from here. Do we go for the sword? Do we make our stand? Do we try and find something or someone that can break the chains? They contemplated going and trying to find Bell. They knew that Bell used to rule Hell. That was about it. But if they could find him and sway him to their cause, maybe he could help them out. So there was potential in that discussion for them to go any of a number of ways. So that's what we did. That's my take on the two paths. You can treat it as a sandbox with many different things, and many different places they can go and zigzag around the place, and then you just slot in as DM what information is available at what place to keep it tracking along. I'm perfectly fine myself with a bit of sandbox, but from a DM perspective, it's good to be able to prepare better when there's a plot and a story that they at least generally go through. But you need to be adaptable for what the players want to do as well, and where they might lead things. Some of the most fun and also unexpected things are when you give the players free rein to do that. So that's the two paths. If you're interested, the whole lot is on our podcast. We record it every session, and you can see this is branded now as a Rime of the Frost Maiden, because we've just played two episodes of that. We'll be playing all the way through that as well. And I listen to D&D podcasts because I'm an uber nerd. On the way to work, so as I'm driving, I listen to ones, mostly things that I'm thinking of playing myself, because it gives me an example of how others are playing it if they're a little bit ahead of me. And I did that with two different podcasts for Descendant of Avernus, which was interesting, other DMs' take on it. So that's podcast because it's sound only, but for anyone who's interested, we're also started to record partway through on YouTube. And so the ones that are recorded while we've been in COVID world are all Roll20 Discord, and you can see Raw Dog Rolls, the channel, and all of our recorded sessions are up there, including the one-shots, and you can see Rime of the Frost Maiden, the very first couple of episodes there. So I've been jibber-jabbering on for a while now. I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I'm going to be circling back to Descent into Avernus talk for a while. I found it a fun adventure. I found it, perfectly fine to play. I think it sort of lends itself, or they like leaning you to the opportunity for evil play, but I'm generally like to strictly meat and potatoes. The characters are heroes, even if they are a little bit on the edge, or some of them. But sticking to the archetypes of the different characters. Okay, I hope that you might get some value out of this if you're looking at Chapter 3 and wondering where to go, and also quizzing whether this is truly sandbox, or whether this is just one big long Hansel and Gretel lead through Avernus. If anyone's interested, again, podcast and YouTube for Rime of the Frost Maiden. Thank you.